Chapter 2. "You got this location fixed?" Irene Strebick asked her co-pilot as their dropship dropped rapidly toward the ground.
"The signal fades in and out."
Lieutenant Suarez held on to the sides of the console.
"We're coming in too fast," he warned the pilot. "We won't be able—"
"Just find him," Irene ordered.
"Chaika, you there?"
No answer. She had a three-ship flight of Scarab dropships. There had been four in the flight. One had been struck by shrapnel and didn't survive the atmospheric entry. Her flight had landed with the first wave without incident and ahead of schedule, and were approaching the Chesapeake Bay to reload with troops and gear when the assault carrier literally got jumped by Theranan warships. The enemy had at least two heavy cruisers, possibly a battle cruiser or different type of heavy cruiser, plus support ships she hadn't been able to count. The three UN Navy destroyers had been more than sufficient for close-space orbital fire support and easily chased away the single elderly Cristang frigate when they arrived at Globacus. But against major combatant ships of a second-tier species, the destroyers were significantly outmatched. Admiral Zhao had opted to upgrade only the sensors of the fleet's destroyers in the Phase 1 refit, a trade-off that made sense at the time. A decision that resulted in three light vessels facing much heavier warships built by a peer species.
"Raise a flight, spread out to cover the southern LZs."
She could see too much smoke rising from the landing zones to the east. Those had been attacked by local aircraft. The life sign indicators from those areas were few and spotty, and secondary explosions were still rocking the sites. Setting down in those zones was too dangerous, and there might not be enough people left alive to fill the dropship's cabin.
"Take aboard everyone you can, but get out of there. The shockwave won't wait for you."
The other two Scarabs acknowledged the order and veered away toward their own objectives.
"Suarez, hang on. I'm going to hit the thrusters to flare. It—"
"This is David Chaika," a familiar voice called through a squeal of static.
"Who?" "Dave, this is Irene."
She didn't have time for protocol. Snapping her fingers to the co-pilot, she caught his eye. Suarez flashed a thumbs up without taking focus away from the console. A yellow icon appeared on the moving map in front of her.
"Gotcha," she grunted. "Dave, you there?"
"Yes.
We have several—"
"I will be on the ground in 20 seconds. We are coming in hot. Anyone who wants a ride needs to move. I can't stay on the ground long. People only. No gear. No gear."
If the Maverick on the ground replied, she didn't hear it, as she fired the thrusters in the nose, throwing her forward against the straps, her vision blurring. Dragging a finger back along the touchscreen flight controls, she hauled the nose up hard, exposing the aircraft's belly to the airstream. 3, 4, briefly 5 G's of force threw her back in the seat, crushing her down. The flight suit clamped around her legs and abdomen, helping to prevent blood draining from her head. She felt a sharp burning sensation in her neck as a flexible tube located an artery and injected oxygen-saturated artificial blood cells, feeding her brain and helping keep her alert as the Scarab roared and shook around her. Shoving against rather than flying through the air, the big dropship went ballistic, falling in a roughly controlled arc toward a clearing in the forest ahead and below. Beside her, Suarez grunted something unintelligible. Irene guessed her co-pilot was trying to warn her they would overshoot the landing zone. Slewing the bulky spacecraft to the right and standing it practically on its tail, she watched airspeed bleed off rapidly. And suddenly, the Scarab was falling, its weight pulling it down. Pushing the nose forward did nothing to slow the fall. The stubby wings did not generate much lift even when the craft was being flown in a sane manner. The dark trees of the dense forest rose up to meet them at a dizzying rate. Irene fired the belly thrusters, surging them at full power to arrest the fall.
"Cracks a ramp," she ordered.
Opening the rear ramp in the air was against regulations, but they couldn't wait to cycle it open after they touched down. In the right-hand seat, Suarez didn't argue. He knew what was at stake. If he had any questions, he could look down to see the desperate people on the ground, or up to see the falling ruin of a starship that was seemingly on top of them. At the last moment, she had to jerk the substantial mass of the Scarab to the left to avoid a lump on the ground that she realized almost too late was the chameleon wear of a mech suit. The dropship dropped, contacting the ground with the left landing strut, which bent under the strain. The magnetic shock absorber mechanism blew out and allowed the inner cylinder to drive up against the top of the strut tube, jamming the whole strut upward and bending the frame it attached to.
Second to touchdown was the nose strut, which fared better, carrying only the unloaded mass of the forward cabin. When the still-functional right strut hit, it bounced back, throwing the Scarab's weight toward the left, and that strut buckled at an awkward angle. Warning lights flashed on her console, none of which Irene gave a shit about. The craft was still flight-worthy for the short flight she intended. There were three things she cared about on the console. Engine status that showed the big turbines were ready to push them up into orbit if there was any reason to go in that direction. The threat warning sensors showed no known missiles or enemy aircraft in range, so there was one less thing for her to worry about. And the rapidly counting down time to impact of the artificial meteor that was racing toward her at hypersonic speed. How long could she stay on the ground? None of the instruments could tell her. It was a judgment call. Her call. Her decision when to lift off, no matter how many people she had to leave behind. If she waited too long, everyone would get crushed by the shockwave.
15 seconds. She reached across and tapped Suarez on the shoulder. Then we go.
We go. He nodded, not looking up from the console.
Landing gear is pranged, and we won't be flying long enough for it to matter. Cycle the ramp closed after we lift off.
After liftoff, got it.
7 seconds, Irene noted anxiously.
The door between the cockpit and cabin was closed, but she could faintly hear the pounding of heavy boots on the deck, and a sensor informed her the spacecraft was taking on weight quickly. Added mass was not the problem. The Scarab's belly jets were ready for full power, and even cramming in mech-suited soldiers like sardines would not test the dropship's lifting ability.
Time.
The limiting factor was time. Cameras could provide a view of the cabin and the rear ramp, but she had that display turned off. She did not want to see the people still running toward safety when she had to lift off to save the people she could.
3, 2, 1. Time's up, Irene announced, and fed power to the turbines, using the belly jets only for stability.
The big spacecraft wobbled as its landing skids broke free. Jates, with superior speed and coordination that made a difference even in powered armor, bounced forward, and his boots struck the ramp even while the dropship was obscured by swirling dirt and grasses kicked up by the belly jets that were still shrieking as they spooled down. His momentum carried him forward, and he would have crashed into the back of the crowd jamming the narrow entryway to the main cabin if his suit had not automatically interfaced with the dropship's AI. The two devices decided their best option was to engage the sticky nanofibers on the soles of his boots, adhering them to the deck and bringing him to a sudden stop, lurching with arms flung back for balance. His helmet still bumped the back of the soldier ahead of him, and someone jolted him from behind. Urged forward by the emotionless voice of the dropship AI, he twisted one, then the other foot to break the grip of the nanofibers and stepped to the side, squeezing up against the bare wall at the top of the ramp.
Chaika!
Jates called out, his eyes flicking from watching the ramp and the synthetic view overlaid on the visor. A symbol for Chaika, David, SSGC, showed that the human was close, and then Jates saw the distinctive helmet insignia of Legion security contractors right behind the ramp. Chaika ran, a meter from relative safety, when there was a roar and the dropship rocked, before slowly leaving the ground again. The sudden movement of the ship threw Dave off balance, a moment of sheer terror as he slid backwards without control over his fate. His boots couldn't find any purchase on the very bottom of the ramp. Either the suit talked with the dropship AI, or it made a decision for itself, because it flung him forward to crash on his armored chest, hands scrambling for a grip on the recessed cargo tie-downs. His fat fingers couldn't fit in the slots. The Scarab tilting its nose up to climb made him slide backwards, tumbling out the... Someone grabbed his right wrist and he was yanked to a halt, his legs dangling out into the air.
Thank,
he started to say, when an immense weight crashed into his left leg and he was jerked backward. Someone had leapt up and gotten hold of his suit leg, hanging on for life.
Hey,
Dave grunted as his visor splashed warnings of overstrain. The ramp was cycling closed, already halfway up. The dropship's nose was tilted up 45 degrees and increasing.
Chaika!
An alien voice he recognized boomed in his ear.
Move! You have to get in! I can't hold... Pull! Pull us in! Can't!
The big bird grunted.
Have to!
Dave knew what he had to do. Kick out with his right leg. make whoever had an iron grip on his left calf let go. If he didn't, they would both die. He couldn't do it. The suit computer did it for him. It analyzed the situation, including the dropship AI's increasingly strident demands to clear the ramp, and concluded that the human wearing it would perish if the weight on the left leg was not removed. Sending a pulse along the armored skin of that leg broke the grip, repelling the other suit's gloves. Instantly, Dave was yanked forward by Jates hauling on his arm, bashing him against three soldiers hanging onto straps at the top of the ramp. It felt like his shoulder was dislocated. He had no time to consider the pain. Before he was falling, the dropship having gone vertical and rocketing upward at full speed. Jates lost his grip. Dave tumbled to crash onto the ramp as it closed the last few centimeters and an armored Verdcris crashed on top of him. Dave gasped. Gonna stay right here. Irene feared she had screwed up badly. Maybe fatally. The pilot console was flashing a collision alert, along with red warning lights glowing that the left side gear would not retract. With a flick of a finger, she activated the mechanism that severed that gear from its mount, and it fell away, allowing the doors to slide closed. Having the door not sticking out into the airstream might give them just a bit more airspeed, not that it would matter. The dropship was going to get crushed by the hypersonic shockwave of the falling starship. What are you... Suarez looked at Irene in shock as she held the ship on its tail, engines pumping out full power. We need to get clear of... No time! She slid a control to roll the main engines from scramjet to full rocket mode, vastly increasing the fuel burn rate and giving them maximum thrust. We need altitude, she explained, holding to the vertical course. The shockwave will decrease as the air thins out. Her co-pilot only grunted in response. Irene felt a pang of terrified uncertainty. Was she doing the right thing? They could move faster if the Scarab's engines were not supporting its entire weight. No. The Jarapha-built ship had a limit to how fast it could fly in an atmosphere before the thermal load on the nose was too great and the forward structure would distort, losing the flight control sensors there. Going out away from the impact site was a futile tactic. They couldn't outrun the shockwave. Altitude was their only... Turn into it! Suarez urged. Turn into... She saw the danger and was already cutting engine power, swinging the nose around. The first piece of starship had already streaked past underneath, with another even larger section of the same or a different ship close behind. The air was distorted by heat and pressure waves. It raced toward them. At the last second, Irene slid her hands off the touchscreen to hold on to the sides of the console. The Scarab's AI was in control. It could react faster than any biological pilot. Please, God, she muttered. Don't let me... For the next half a minute, or what felt like half a lifetime, Irene was a passenger in her own ship. The shockwave struck the Scarab like a brick wall, standing the spacecraft on its nose as the shockwave erupted upward. Aerodynamic surfaces were retracted so they weren't torn away by the hypersonic blast. The ship's AI fell back on furiously popping thrusters to keep the nose pointed into the wave. That worked, until external sensors were overwhelmed and became unreliable, contradicting each other. The AI had to guide itself by internal mechanisms, which also worked, until they too began to give readings that had to be false. Unless the ship was upside down and moving at only 40 kilometers per hour. The AI switched to using its own judgment, one step above admitting with a shrug that it had no idea where they were and what was happening. Normally it would have had guidance beams from satellites or ships in orbit. Instead, it had to guess. It guessed correctly for nearly 30 seconds, or it got lucky for most of that time. After the worst of the shockwave had washed over them to create a massive bulge in the stratosphere, the dropship's nose wobbled left, overcorrected to the right, and suddenly, the craft snapped sideways into the hellaciously fast airstream. There was a sharp metallic groaning, ending with a bang, as something important tore loose and the Scarab flipped onto its back. Then Irene lost track of her orientation. Up was down, left was right. Her insides felt like they were on her outside. The forward displays were still operating, showing dizzying flashes of roiling dark clouds, dark sky, and through rents in the dust-choked clouds, the blasted landscape above and to the left. The ground was above and to the left. Her thoroughly rattled inner ear could not tell her which way was down, but her eyes knew. Hooking her thumbs around the edge of the console to brace her hands, she slid her fingers back onto the touchscreen controls and gently, gently banked the bulky spacecraft so its belly was toward the ground. Or she thought the craft was right side up. With the instruments scrolling through one unlikely status to another, she had to fly literally by the seat of her pants. Her right butt cheek felt like it was pressing down harder than the left, so she slowly rolled to the left.
Here.
Suarez put his left hand between the two consoles, holding a spare cargo tie-down strap. It drooped only slightly to the right and forward, pulled by the planet's gravity. Instruments could fail or be inaccurate, but gravity always pointed down.
You're kidding me, Irene groaned. That's a basic flight school trick.
It works.
Suarez tried to keep his hand motionless as the strap swayed back and forth.
Good thinking.
The strap hanging more or less straight up and down confirmed her inner sense that she had the dropship reasonably level. She remembered her very first flight. As a little girl, her uncle had taken her up in a glider. Taped to the outside front of the windscreen was a piece of orange yarn to show how the air was moving over the airplane. It was the lowest tech device possible, and it was also highly effective. She was at the controls of an alien spacecraft that probably would cost $250 million on Earth, and the best instrument she had was a cargo strap.
You got anything in your pocket to tell us airspeed or altitude?
We're not in a stall, so airspeed is good enough. And we haven't hit the ground yet, so...
Suarez shrugged.
At least one of us is optimistic. Get out another strap.
Why?
Tie it between our seats and let the one you have now dangle from it. I need you to get the engines restarted. Razor flight. This is Razor lead. Anyone out there?
All she heard was the hiss of enemy jamming. Through the hissing were bursts of static that might be another ship trying to contact her, or even a UN starship. It didn't matter. She couldn't hear them, and they likely couldn't hear her. No one could help her anyway. She needed to get the scarab and the passengers crammed into the cabin on the ground safely if she could. If she could. The portside engine would not restart, and internal sensors couldn't indicate the problem. The starboard engine output was at only 20% power, and even that level caused a vibration that made Irene's teeth rattle.
Dial it back to idle, she ordered. Then slowly increase power in 5% increments.
Roger.
The co-pilot adjusted the power up and down. It took only a minute to determine the best setting for the single engine was 17%. Any more than that, and it threatened to tear loose from its pylon.
We can't hold altitude at 17%, Irene said, what they both knew.
The sky around them was darker. She assumed that was due to the dust being thicker at lower altitude. Suarez's joke didn't seem funny anymore. They might smack into the ground at any moment, and they would never know it. Her best guess was that they were still above 10,000 meters, if the air pressure indicator could be trusted. There were leaks in the cabin. She could hear a high-pitched shrieking below and behind her, so the gauge that measured the pressure difference between the cabin and outside might not be reliable, if it could be trusted at all. The AI was offline, and the backup systems were hung up in the middle of the reboot process. It was ironic, she thought. Much of the time she spent training in simulators was for extremely unlikely scenarios, like partial loss of flight control systems. Yet she had never trained for complete loss of the computers. If she survived, that was going to change. She wished Derek was with her. Suarez was a good pilot, but she didn't know him well, and they had flown together for less than 30 hours.
Suggestions?
Ma'am, without instruments, I can't...
Hey, he looked at her.
The drones. They have an independent monitoring system. It's still active.
He tapped that console. The Scarab was carrying 3 sensor drones in addition to a variety of missiles.
If they're still working,
do it.
She knew what he meant. The drone could pop up above them and light up the area with active sensors. It could tell them where the Scarab was in relation to the ground.
It's responding. I'm going to launch 2 as a backup.
Launch all 3. In fact, eject our missile payload if you can. Make sure they are set to inert.
We need to drop mass, and I don't want their propellant cooking off if we crash.
Affirmative. Drone one is away. Two is hung up. The portside launcher door is jammed. Cycling it again? No joy. Going back to starboard. Drone three is away. Drones one and three are active. Oh, shit.
She saw immediately what the problem was. They were over the impact crater. Craters, actually. The thermal bloom coming from the crash site was blanking out the drone camera's view of the terrain below. Not that it mattered.
Altitude 2,900 meters, Suarez called out. Airspeed 650. Rate of descent,
I see it. Find us a place to set down, fast.
Her co-pilot didn't argue.
Turn left to 335.
She gently banked the spacecraft, dipping the nose to keep the airspeed up. The Scarab, like many transport dropships, was a lifting body design. Its fuselage was designed to act like an airfoil, with only stubby wings to provide control surfaces. At high speeds, air moving over the craft generated lift. At low speed, it flew like a brick.
That's not the shortest path out of...
Shortest path is bad terrain, Suarez explained.
Irene bit her lip. He was right. The indicated direction would take longer to clear the impact zone. But it was upwind of the pall of smoke and ash that was drifting with the prevailing wind, and the ground in that area was relatively flat.
Understood. Warm up the belly jets. We need to test them. If they're not functional...
She didn't need to continue.
I'm seeing red lights on 5 of 12 jets.
Test them one at a time.
That didn't help. Only 7 of the belly jets that were needed for a vertical landing were operational. 3 of them output thrust intermittently, and 1 blew out during testing.
Ma'am, we need to do this the hard way.
If our passengers had chutes, I'd opt for bailing out.
Suarez glanced at the handle that would engage the ejection seat.
I'm not going with you, ma'am.
We're not going anywhere. That is hostile territory down there, with no cover from upstairs,
she said with a catch in her throat. Her fiancé was aboard one of the Navy destroyers that had either been torn apart, disabled, or chased away.
You and I won't last long without the cavalry.
Right. Ma'am, we are going to hit hard.
I don't see any way around it, she agreed. Tell everyone in the cabin to brace as best they can, then find us a flat space to set down, preferably with a long rollout.
The terrain below was relatively flat. It also was covered with the local version of trees. In an argument between the dropship and a single tree, the dropship would not fare well. Against a grove of trees, the Scarab would be torn apart.
Shit! Suarez looked up from his console. I don't see any place to...
We're going into the Hudson,
Irene declared, turning the reluctant spacecraft to the right. Sunlight sparkled off a thin, twisting ribbon of water in front of them.
The Hudson? What? Oh. Oh.
We have any data on that river? Is it deep?
Damn it. Database is not responding. I'm ordering the drones to send out a mapping pulse. It looks, no more than 4 meters deep in this area. Ma'am, I've never done a water landing.
She didn't bother to tell him about the time she deliberately sank a gunship in a river.
I'm more worried that the damned river curves back and forth so much. There isn't much of a straightaway we can use.
The Scarab hit the river with a tremendous splash, coming in more nose down than Irene intended. She had lined up along the longest stretch of straight river they could find, cutting across one long bend of shallow water that was dotted with sandbanks. The heavy spaceship bounced once, crashed back down, and scraped over a sandbank. Through the spray, Irene had a terrifying view of the tree-lined riverbank racing toward them. She was crushed down in the seat as Suarez triggered the ejection system.